and from a short distance ejected the contents onto the toes of the sorcerer's boots. Dorigeré blanched, but did not move. He saw, as everyone did, the Morning Star mace on a cubit-long shaft hanging low at Gar's side. He knew, as everyone did, that the time he needed to cast a spell was incomparably longer than the time Gar needed to smash his head to pieces.
"Very well," Boholt said. "And now, move nicely out of the way, your lordship. And should the desire to open your gob occur to you, quickly shove a bunch of grass into it, because if I hear you whining again, I'll give you something to remember me by."
Boholt turned away and rubbed his hands.
"Right. Gar, Beanpole, let's get to work, because that reptile won't hang around forever."
"Doesn't seem to be planning on going anywhere," Dandelion said, looking at the foreground. "Look at it." The golden dragon on the hill yawned, lifted its head, waved its wings, and lashed the ground with its tail.
"King, Nidamir, and you knights," it yelled with a roar like a brass trumpet. "I am the dragon Vilentretenmerth. As I see, the landslide which I, though I say it as shouldn't, sent down on your heads did not completely stop you. You have come this far. As you know, there are only three ways out of this valley, east towards Bearfield and west towards Cairngorm, and you may use those roads. You will not take the northern gorge, gentlemen, because I, Vilentretenmerth, forbid you. However, if anyone does not wish to respect my injunction, I challenge him to fight an honorable knightly duel. With conventional weapons, without spells, without breathing fire. A fight to the utter capitulation of one of the sides. I await an answer through your herald, as custom dictates."
Everyone stood with their mouths open wide.
"It can talk," Boholt panted. "Remarkable. Not only that, but very intelligently," Yarpin Zegrin said. "Anyone know what a confessional weapon is?"
"An ordinary non-magical one," Yennefer said, frowning. "But something else puzzles me. With a forked tongue, it's not capable of articulated speech. The rogue is using telepathy. Be careful. It works in both directions. It can read your thoughts."
"Has it gone completely balmy or what?"
Kennet Beanpole said, annoyed.
"An honourable duel with a stupid reptile? Not a chance. We'll attack him together. There's strength in numbers."
"No."
They looked around. Ike of Denezla, already mounted in full armour, with his lance set by his stirrup, looked much better than he had on foot. His feverish eyes blazed from beneath his raised visor, and his face was pale.
"No, Kenneth, sir," the knight repeated, "unless it is over my dead body. I will not permit knightly honour to be insulted in my presence. Whomsoever dares to violate the principles of this honourable duel..."
Ike was talking louder and louder. His exalted voice was cracking, and he was trembling with excitement.
"Whomsoever affronts honour also affronts me, and his or my blood will be shed on this tired earth. The beast calls for a duel? Very well. Let the herald trumpet my name. May divine judgment decide. On the dragon's side is the power of fang and talon and infernal fury, and on my side..." "What a moron," Yarpin Zegrin muttered. "On my side, righteousness, faith, the tears of virgins, whom this reptile..."
"That's enough, Ike. You make me want to puke," Boholt yelled. "Go on to the lists. Don't talk. Set about that dragon."
"Eh, Boholt, wait,"
one of the dwarves, tugging on his beard, suddenly said.
"Forgotten about the agreement? If Ike lays low the serpent, he'll take half."
"Ike won't take anything," Boholt grinned. "I know him. He'll be happy if Dandelion writes a song about him."
"Silence," Gillenstierne declared. "Let it be. Against the dragon will ride out the virtuous knight-errant, Ike of Denezla. fighting in the colours of Cairngorn as the lance and sword of King Nidamir. That is the kingly will.
There you have it, Yarpin Zigrin gnashed his teeth. The lance and sword of Nidamir. The Cairngorn kinglet has fixed us. What now?
Nothing, Beholt spat. I reckon you don't want to cross Ike, Yarpin. He talks nonsense, but if he's already mounted his horse and roused himself, better get out of his way. Let him go, damn it, and salt the dragon out, and then we'll see.
Who shall be the herald? Dandelion asked. The dragon wanted a herald. Maybe me?
No, we don't need a song, Dandelion. Beholt frowned. Yarpin Zigrin can be the herald. He's got a voice like a bull.
Very well, no bother, Yarpin said. Bring me a flag-bearer with a banner, so that everything is as it should be.
Just talk politely, dwarf, sir, and courteously, Gillenstiern cautioned.
Don't learn me how to talk.
The dwarf proudly stuck out his belly.
I was sent on diplomatic missions when you lot were still knee-high to a grasshopper.
The dragon continued to sit patiently on the hillock, waving its tail cheerfully. The dwarf clambered up onto the largest boulder, hawked and spat.
Hey, you there,
he yelled, putting his hands on his hips.
You fucking dragon, you. Listen to what the herald has to say. That means me. The first one to take on honourably will be the meandering knight, Ike of Denezla. And he will stick his lance in your paunch, according to the holy custom, to your confusion and to the joy of poor virgins and King Nidamir. It will be a fair fight and honourable. Breathing fire is not allowed, and you may only lambast the other confessionally until the other gives up the ghost or expires, which we sincerely wish on you. Understood, dragon?
The dragon yawned, flapped its wings, and then, flattening itself to the ground, quickly descended from the hillock to level ground.
I have understood, noble herald, it yelled back. Then may the virtuous Ike of Denezla enter the fray. I am ready.
What a pantomime,
Beholt spat, following Ike with a grim expression as he walked his horse over the barrier of boulders.
A ruddy barrel of laughs.
Shut your yap, Beholt, Dandelion shouted, rubbing his hands. Look, Ike is preparing to charge. It'd be a bloody beautiful ballad.
Hurrah! Long live Ike!
Someone shouted from Nidamir's troop of bowmen.
And I, Sheepbagger said gloomily, would still have stuffed him full of brimstone just to be certain.
Ike, already in the field, saluted the dragon with his upraised lance, slammed down his visor, and struck his horse with his spurs.
Well, well, the dwarf said. He may be stupid, but he knows how to charge. Look at him go!
Ike leant forward, braced in the saddle, lowered his lance at full gallop. The dragon, contrary to Geralt's expectations, did not leap aside, did not move in a semicircle, but flattened to the ground, rushed straight at the attacking knight.
Hit him! Hit him, Ike!
Yarpin yelled. Ike, although in full gallop, did not strike headlong, straight ahead. At the last moment, he nimbly changed direction, shifting the lance over his horse's head. Flashing past the dragon, he thrust with all his might, standing up in the stirrups. Everybody shouted in unison. Geralt did not join in with the choir. The dragon evaded the blow with a delicate, agile, graceful turn and, coiling like a living golden ribbon, as quick as lightning, but softly, cat-like, reached a foot beneath the horse's belly. The horse squealed, jerking its crup high up, and the knight rocked in the saddle, but did not release his lance. Just as the horse was about to hit the ground snout first, the dragon swept Ike from the saddle with a fierce swipe of his clawed foot. Everybody saw his breastplate spinning upwards, and everybody heard the clanking and thudding with which the knight fell onto the ground. The dragon, sitting on its haunches, pinned the horse with a foot and lowered its toothy jaws. The horse squealed shrilly, struggled, and then was quiet. In the silence that fell, everybody heard the deep voice of the dragon, Vilentre Tenmyth.
The doughty Ike of Denezla may now be taken from the battlefield, for he is incapable of fighting any longer. Next, please.
Oh, fuck, Yapin Zigrin said, in the silence that followed. Chapter 8
Both legs,
Yennefer said, wiping her hands on a linen cloth,
and probably something with his spine. The armour on his back is dented as though he'd been hit by a pile driver. He injured his legs with his own lance. He won't be mounting a horse for some time, if he ever mounts one again.
Professional hazard, Geralt muttered. The sorceress frowned.
Is that all you have to say?
And what else would you like to hear, Yennefer?
That dragon is unbelievably fast, Geralt. Too fast for a man to fight it.
I understand. No, Yen, not me.
Principles? The sorceress smiled spitefully. Or ordinary commonplace fear? The only human feeling that wasn't eradicated in you.
One and the other, the Witcher agreed dispassionately. What difference does it make?
Precisely. Yennefer came closer. None. Principles may be broken. Fear can be overcome. Kill that dragon, Geralt. For me.
For you.
For me. I want that dragon, Geralt. In one piece. I want to have him all for myself.
So, cast a spell and kill it.
No, you kill it. And I'll use my spells to hold back the Reavers and the others so they don't interfere.
You'll kill them, Yennefer.
Since when has that ever bothered you? You take care of the dragon, I'll deal with the people.
Yennefer, the Witcher said coldly, I don't understand. What do you want with that dragon? Does the yellowness of its scales dazzle you to that degree? You don't suffer from poverty, after all. You have numerous sources of income. You're famous. What are you about? Just don't talk about a calling, I beg you.
Yennefer was silent. Then, finally, twisting her lips, aimed a powerful kick at a stone lying in the grass. There's someone who can help me, Geralt. Apparently it's... You know what I'm talking about. Apparently it isn't irreversible. There's a chance. I could still have... Do you understand?
I do.
It's a complex operation, costly. But in exchange for a golden dragon... Geralt!
The Witcher remained silent.
When we were hanging on the bridge, the sorceress said, you asked me for something. I'll meet your request, in spite of everything.
The Witcher smiled sadly and touched the obsidian star on Yennefer's neck with his index finger. It's too late, Yen. We aren't hanging now. It's stopped mattering to me, in spite of everything.
He expected the worst. A cascade of fire, lightning, a smack in the face, abuse, curses. He was surprised just to see the suppressed trembling of her lips.
Yennefer slowly turned away. Geralt regretted his words. He regretted the emotion which had engendered them. The limit of possibility overstepped, now snapped like a lute string. He looked at Dandelion and saw the troubadour quickly turn his head away and avoid his gaze.
Well, I got the issue of knightly honour out of the way, my lords, Boholt called,
now dressed in armour and standing before Nidamir, who was still sitting on a stone with an unvarying expression of boredom on his face.
Knightly honour is lying there groaning softly. It was a lousy idea, Lord Gillenstierne, to send out Ike as your knight and vassal. I wouldn't dream of pointing the finger, but I know whom Ike can thank for his broken pins. Yes, I swear we've killed two birds with one stone. One was a lunatic, insanely reviving the legends of how a bold knight defeats a dragon in a duel, and the other, a swindler, who wanted to make money from it. Do you know who I'm talking about, Gillenstierne? What? Good. And now our move. Now the dragon is ours. Now we, the Reavers, will sort out that dragon, but by ourselves. And the agreement, Boholt? The Chancellor drawled. What about the agreement? I don't give a shit about the agreement. This is outrageous! This is lese majesty!
Gillenstierne stamped his foot.
King Nidamir, what about the king?
Boholt yelled, resting on an enormous two-handed sword.
Perhaps the king will personally decide to take on the dragon by himself, Or perhaps you, his faithful chancellor, will squeeze your belly into a suit of armour and go into battle. Why not? Please do. We'll wait, my lord. You had your chance, Gillenstern. Had Ike mortally lanced the dragon, you would have taken it in its entirety. Nothing would have been left to us, because we hadn't helped, not one golden scale on its back. But it's too late now. Open your eyes. There's no one to fight under Cairngorm's colours. You won't find another chump like Ike.
That's not true,
the cobbler Sheepbagger said, hurrying to the king, who was still busy watching a point on the horizon of interest only to him.
Oh, king, just wait a little, and our men from Bearfield will be arriving. They'll be here any moment. To hell with the cocksure nobility. Chase them away. You'll see who is really brave, who is strong indeed, and not just in word.
Shut your trap, Boholt said calmly, wiping a spot of rust from his breastplate. Shut your trap, peasant, because if you don't, I'll shut it so hard I'll shove your teeth down your throat.
Sheepbagger, seeing Kennet and Gar approaching, quickly backed away and hid among the Bearfield constables.
King, Gillenstern called. Oh, king, what do you command?
The expression of boredom suddenly vanished from Nidamir's face. The underage monarch wrinkled his freckly nose and stood up.
What do I command? He said in a shrill voice. You finally asked, Gillenstern, rather than decide for me and speak for me and on my behalf. I'm very pleased, and may it thus remain, Gillenstern. From this moment, you will be silent and listen to my orders. Here is the first of them. Muster the men and order Ike of Dunesley to be placed on a wagon. We're going back to Cairngorm.
Back there, not
a word, Gillenstern. Madam Yennefer, noble lords, I bid you farewell. I've lost some time on this expedition, but have gained much. I have learned a great deal. Thank you for your words, Madam Yennefer, Master Dorigere, Sir Boholt, and thank you for your silence, Sir Geralt.
Oh, king, Gillenstern said. What do you mean? The dragon is in our grasp. It's there for the taking. King, your dream, my dream,
Nidamir repeated pensively.
I do not have it yet. And should I stay here, then I might never have it.
Mariore, and the hand of the princess?
The Chancellor waved his arms, not giving up.
And the throne, king. The people there will acknowledge you as...
I don't give a shit about the people there, as Sir Boholt would say,
Nidamir laughed.
The throne of Mariore is mine anyway, because in Cairngorm I have 300 armoured troops and 1,500 foot soldiers against their 1,000 crappy spearmen. Do they acknowledge me? They will have to. I'll keep hanging, beheading and dismembering until they do. And their princess is a fat goose and to hell with her hand. I only need her womb. Let her bear me an heir, and then I'll poison her anyway, using Master Sheepbagger's method. That's enough chatter, Gillenstern. Set about carrying out my orders.
Indeed, Dandelion whispered to Geralt. He has learned a great deal.
A great deal, Geralt confirmed, looking at the hillock, where the golden dragon, with its triangular head lowered, was licking something grey-green, sitting in the grass beside it with its forked scarlet tongue.
But I wouldn't like to be his subject, Dandelion.
And what do you think will happen now?
The Witcher looked calmly at the tiny grey-green creature, fluttering its bat-like wings beside the golden talons of the stooping dragon.
And what's your opinion about all this, Dandelion? What do you think?
What does it matter what I think? I'm a poet, Geralt. Does my opinion matter at all?
Yes, it does.
Well, I'll tell you then. When I see a reptile, Geralt, a viper, let's say, or some other serpent, it gives me the creeps. The vileness disgusts and terrifies me. But that dragon...
Yeah?
It's pretty, Geralt.
Thank you, Dandelion.
What for?
Geralt turned his head away, and with a slow movement reached for the buckle of his belt, which crossed his chest diagonally and shortened it by two holes. He lifted his right hand to check if his sword hilt was positioned correctly. Dandelion looked on with eyes wide open.
Geralt? Do you mean to...
Yes, the Witcher said calmly. There is a limit to what I can accept as possible. I've had enough of all this. Are you going with Nidamir or staying, Dandelion?
The troubadour leaned over, placed his lute beneath a stone cautiously and with great care, and then straightened up.
I'm staying. What did you say? The limits of possibility?
I'm bagging that as the title of a ballad.
It could be your last one, Dandelion.
Geralt?
Hmm?
Don't kill it. Can you not?
A sword is a sword, Dandelion. Once drawn.
Please try.
I will.
Dorigeray chuckled, turned towards Yennefer and the Reavers, and pointed at the receding royal caravan.
Over there, he said, King Nidamir is leaving. He no longer gives orders through Gilenstierne's mouth. He is departing, having demonstrated good sense. I'm glad you're here, Dandelion. I suggest you begin composing a ballad.
What about?
About?
The sorcerer drew his wand from his coat.
Master Dorigeray, sorcerer, chasing back home the rabble who wanted to use vulgar methods to kill the last golden dragon left in the world. Don't move, Boholt. Yarpen, hands off your battle axe. Don't move a muscle, Yennefer.
Off you go, good-for-nothings.
Follow the king like good little boys. Be off. Mount your horses or wagons. I warn you that if anybody makes a false move, all that will remain of him will be a burning smell and a bit of fused sand. I am serious.
Dorigeray, Yennefer hissed.
My lord sorcerer, Boholt said conciliatorily. Is this any way to act?
Be quiet, Boholt. I told you not to touch that dragon. Fables are not to be killed. About turn and scram.
Yennefer's hand suddenly shot forward, and the ground around Dorigeray exploded in blue flame, seething in a dust cloud of torn turf and grit. The sorcerer staggered, encircled by fire. Gar leapt forward and struck him in the face with the heel of his hand. Dorigeray fell to the ground, a bolt of red lightning shooting from his wand and harmlessly zapping out among the rocks. Beanpole sprang at him from the other side, kicked the sorcerer to the ground, and took a backswing to repeat the blow. Geralt fell among them, pushed Beanpole away, drew his sword and thrust flat, aiming between the breastplate and the spaulder. He was thwarted by Boholt, who parried the blow with the broad blade of his two-handed sword. Dandelion tried to trip Gar, but ineffectively. Gar clung to the bard's rainbow-hued jerkin and thumped him between the eyes with his fist. Yarpen Zigrin, leaping from behind, tripped Dandelion, hitting him behind his knees with the haft of a hatchet. Geralt spun into a pirouette, evading Boholt's sword, and jabbed at the onrushing Beanpole, tearing off his iron bracer. Beanpole leapt back, tripped and fell over. Boholt grunted and whirled his sword like a scythe. Geralt jumped over the whistling blade, slammed the hilt of his sword into Boholt's breastplate, fended him off, and thrust, aiming for his cheek. Boholt, realizing he could not parry with his heavy sword, threw himself backwards, falling on his back. The witcher leapt at him, and at that moment felt the earth fall away from under his rapidly numbing feet. He saw the horizon going from horizontal to vertical. Vainly trying to form a protective sign with his fingers, he fell heavily onto the ground on his side, his sword slipping from his numb hand. There was a pounding and a buzzing in his ears. "Tie them up before the spell stops working," Yennefer said, somewhere above but very far away. "All three of them." Dorigeray and Geralt, befuddled and paralyzed, allowed themselves to be bound and tethered to a wagon, silently and without resisting. Dandelion fought and cursed, so he received a punch in the face before he was tied to the wagon.
"Why tie him up, traitors, sons of dogs?" Sheepbagger said, walking over. "They should be clubbed to death at once and be done with it." "You're a son yourself and not a dog's," Yarpen Zigrin said. "Don't insult dogs here. Scram, you heel."
"You're awfully brave," Sheepbagger snapped. "We'll see if you're brave enough when my comrades arrive from Bearfield. They'll be here any moment. You—"
Yarpen, twisting with surprising agility, considering his build, whacked Sheepbagger over the head with his hatchet. Gar, standing alongside, gave him a kick for good measure. Sheepbagger flew a few feet through the air and fell nose first in the grass.
"You'll be sorry,"
he yelled, crawling on all fours.
"I'll fix—" "Lads," Yarpen Zigrin roared. "Kick the cobbler in the cobblers. Grab him, Gar."
Sheepbagger did not wait. He sprang up and dashed towards the eastern canyon. The Bearfield trackers followed him, cringing. The dwarves, cackling, sent a hail of stones after them.
"The air's freshened up already," Yarpen laughed. "Right, Boholt, let's get down to the dragon."
"Hold on." Yennefer raised a hand. "The only thing you're getting down to is the bottom of the valley. Be gone, all of you."
"Excuse me?"
Boholt bent over, his eyes blazing ominously.
"What did you say, most honourable Madam Witch?"
follow that cobbler, Yennefer repeated. All of you. I'll deal with the dragon myself, using unconventional weapons. And you can thank me as you leave. Had it not been for me, you would have tasted the witch's sword. Come now, quickly, Boholt, before I lose my temper. I warn you that I know a spell which can make you all geldings. I just have to raise my hand.
Is that so? Boholt drawled. My patience has reached its limits. I won't be made a fool of. Beanpole, unhook the shaft from the cart. I feel I'll also be needing unconventional weapons. Someone is soon going to get a damn good thrashing, my lords. I won't point the finger, but a certain hideous witch is going to get a bloody sound hiding.
Just try, Boholt. You'll brighten up my day.
Why, Yennefer? The dwarf asked reproachfully.
Perhaps I simply don't like sharing, Yarpin.
Well, now. Yarpin Zigrin smiled. That's profoundly human. So human it's almost dwarven. It's nice to see familiar qualities in a sorceress. But I don't like sharing either, Yennefer.
He hunched into a short, very rapid backswing. A steel ball, appearing out of his pocket as if from nowhere, whirred through the air and smacked Yennefer right in the forehead. Before the sorceress had time to come to her senses, she was suspended in the air, being held up by Beanpole and Gar, and Yarpin was binding her ankles with twine. Yennefer screamed furiously, but one of Yarpin's boys threw the wagon's reins over her head from behind and pulled them tight, the leather strap digging into her open mouth, stifling her cries.
"Well, Yennefer," Boholt said as he walked over, "how do you plan to turn me into a gelding now, when you can't move a hand?"
He tore the collar of her coat, and then ripped and wrenched open her blouse. Yennefer shrieked, choked by the reins.
"I don't have the time now," Boholt said, groping her shamelessly to the cackling of the dwarves. "But wait a little while, witch. Once we've sorted out the dragon, we'll make merry. Tie her firmly to the wheel, boys. Both little hands to the rim, so she won't be able to lift a finger. And no one's to bloody touch her yet, my lords. We'll sort the order out, depending on who does a good job on the dragon." "Beware, Boholt,"
Geralt, arms tied, said softly, calmly and ominously. "I'll follow you to the ends of the world."
"You surprise me," the Reaver replied, just as calmly. "In your place, I'd keep mum. I know you, and I know I have to take your threat seriously. I won't have a choice. You might not come out of this alive, Witcher. We'll return to this matter. Gar, Beanpole, to horse."
"What bad luck," Dandelion snapped. "Why the hell did I get mixed up in this?"
Dorigere, lowering his head, watched the thick drops of blood slowly dripping from his nose onto his belly.
"Would you stop staring?" the sorceress screamed at Geralt.
She was writhing like a snake in her bonds, vainly trying to conceal her exposed charms. The Witcher obediently turned his head away. Dandelion did not.
"You must have used an entire barrel of mandrake elixir in what I can see, Yennefer," the bard laughed. "Your skin's like a 16-year-old's, damn it." "Shut your trap, horse son," the sorceress bellowed. "How old are you actually, Yennefer?" Dandelion asked, not giving up. 200? Well, 150, let's say. And you're behaving like..."
Yennefer twisted her neck and spat at him, but was wide of the mark.
"Yen,"
the Witcher said reproachfully, wiping his spit-covered ear on his shoulder.
"I wish he would stop staring."
"Not on your life," Dandelion said, without taking his eyes off the bedraggled sorceress. "I'm here because of her. They may slit our throats, but at least I'll die happy."
"Shut up, Dandelion," the Witcher said.
"I have no intention of so doing. In fact, I plan to compose the Ballad of the Two Tits. Please don't interfere."
"Dandelion," Dorigere sniffed through his bloody nose. "Be serious. I am being bloody serious."
The dwarves heaved Boholt up into the saddle. He was heavy and squat from the armour and the leather pads he was wearing. Gar and Beanpole were already mounted, holding huge two-handed swords across their saddles.
"Right," Boholt rasped. "Let's have at him."
"Oh, no," said a deep voice, sounding like a brass trumpet. "I have come to you."
From beyond the ring of boulders emerged a long snout shimmering with gold, a slender neck armed with a row of triangular serrated projections, and behind taloned feet. The evil, reptilian eyes with their vertical pupils peered from beneath horned eyelids.
"I was tired of waiting in the open," the dragon, Vilentra Tenmirth, said, looking around. "So, I came myself. Fewer and fewer challengers, I see."
Boholt held the reins in his teeth and a longsword two-handed.
"That's not,"
he said indistinctly, holding the strap in his teeth.
"Still fight, Hestile."
"I am,"
the dragon said, arching its back and lifting its tail insultingly. Boholt looked around. Gar and Beanpole, slowly, almost ostentatiously, calmly flanked the dragon. Yarp and Zigrin and his boys waited behind, holding battle axes.
"Ah!"
Boholt roared, striking his horse hard with his heels and lifting his sword. The dragon curled up, flattened itself to the ground, and struck with its tail from above and behind, like a scorpion hitting not Boholt but Gar, who was attacking from the side. Gar fell over with his horse amid a clanking, screaming, and neighing tumult. Boholt, charging at a gallop, struck with a terrible blow, but the dragon nimbly dodged the wide blade. The momentum of the gallop carried Boholt alongside the dragon's body. The dragon twisted, standing on its hind legs, and clawed Beanpole, tearing open his horse's belly and the rider's thigh with a single slash. Boholt, leaning far out from the saddle, managed to steer his horse around, pulling the reins with his teeth, and attacked once more. The dragon lashed its tail over the dwarves rushing towards it, knocking them all over, and then lunged at Boholt, en route, seemingly in passing, stamping vigorously on Beanpole, who was trying to get up. Boholt, jerking his head around, tried to steer his galloping horse, but the dragon was infinitely quicker and more agile. Cunningly stealing up on Boholt from the left in order to obstruct his swing, it struck with a taloned foot. The horse reared up and lurched over to one side. Boholt flew from the saddle, losing his sword and helmet, tumbling backwards onto the ground, banging his head against a rock.
"Run for it, lads! Up the hill!"
Yarp and Zigrin bellowed, outshouting the screams of Gar, who was pinned down by his horse. Beards fluttering, the dwarves dashed towards the rocks at a speed that belied their short legs. The dragon did not give chase. It sat calmly and looked around. Gar was thrashing and screaming beneath the horse. Boholt lay motionless. Beanpole was crawling towards the rocks, sideways, like a huge iron crab.
"Staggering," Dora Garay whispered. "Staggering."
"Hey!" Dandelion struggled in his bonds, making the wagon shake.
"What is it?"
"Over there! Look!" A great cloud of dust could be seen on the eastern side of the gorge, and shouting, rattling, and the tramping of hooves quickly reached them. The dragon extended its neck to look. Three large wagons full of armed men rolled onto the plain. Splitting up, they began to surround the dragon.
"It's... damn it! It's the constabulary and guilds from Bearfield," Dandelion called. "They came around by the source of the Brer. Yes, it's them! Look! It's Sheepbagger, there at the front!"
The dragon lowered its head and gently pushed a small green-greyish mewling creature towards the wagon. Then it struck the ground with its tail, roared loudly, and shot like an arrow towards the encounter with the men of Bearfield.
"What is it?" Yennefer asked. "That little thing, crawling around in the grass, Geralt."
"It's what the dragon was protecting from us," the Witcher said. "That's what hatched some time ago in the cave, over there in the northern canyon. It's the dragonling from the egg of the dragon that Sheepbagger poisoned."
The dragonling, stumbling and dragging its bulging belly across the ground, scurried unsteadily over to the wagon, squealed, stood on its hind legs, stretched out its little wings, and then, without a second's thought, clung to the sorceress's side. Yennefer, with an extremely queer look on her face, sighed loudly.
"It likes you," Geralt murmured.
"He's young, but he ain't stupid."
Dandelion, twisting in his fetters, grinned.
"Look where he's stuck his snout. I'd like to be in his shoes, damn it. Hey, little one, run away. That's Yennefer, terror of dragons. And witches. Well, at least one witcher."
"Quiet, Dandelion," Dorogare shouted. "Look over there, on the battlefield. They've got him, a pox on them."
The Bearfield wagons, rumbling like war chariots, raced towards the attacking dragon.
"Smack him!" Sheepbagger yelled,
hanging on to the wagoner's back. Smack him, kinsman, anywhere and anyhow. Don't hold back. The dragon nimbly eluded the first advancing wagon, flashing with scythe blades, forks and spears, but ended up between the next two, from which a huge double fishing net pulled by straps dropped onto it. The dragon, fully enmeshed, fell down, rolled over, curled up in a ball and spread its legs. The net tore to shreds with a sharp rending noise. More nets were thrown onto it from the first wagon, which had managed to turn around, this time utterly entangling the dragon. The two other wagons also turned back, dashed towards the dragon, rattling and bouncing over bumps.
"You're caught in the net, you carp!" Sheepbagger bawled. "And we'll soon scale you!"
The dragon roared and belched a cloud of steam into the sky. The Bearfield constables rushed towards him, spilling out of the wagons. The dragon bellowed again, desperately, with a thundering roar. From the northern canyon came a reply, a high-pitched battle cry. Out from the gorge, straining forward in a frenzied gallop, blonde plait streaming, whistling piercingly, surrounded by the flickering flashes of sabres, charged
the Zerikanians,
the Witcher shouted, helplessly tugging at the ropes.
Oh, shit, Dandelion chimed in. Geralt, do you understand?
The Zerikanians rode through the throng like hot knives through a barrel of butter, scattering their path with massacred corpses, and then leapt from their horses in full flight to stand beside the dragon struggling in the net. The first of the onrushing constables immediately lost his head. The second aimed a blow with his pitchfork at Veer, but the Zerikanian, holding her sabre in both hands upside down, with the tip pointing towards the ground, slashed him open from crotch to sternum. The others beat a hurried retreat.
"To the wagons!" Sheepbagger yelled. "To the wagons, kinsmen! We'll crush them into the wagons!"
"Geralt!" Yennefer suddenly shouted, pulling up her bound legs and pushing them with a sudden thrust under the wagon, beneath the arms of the Witcher, which were bound and twisted behind him.
"The Igni sign! Make it! Can you feel the rope? Cast the bloody thing!"
"Without looking," Geralt groaned. "I'll burn you, Yen. Make the sign! I can take it!"
He obeyed, and felt a tingling in his fingers, which were forming the Igni sign, just above the sorceress's bound ankles. Yennefer turned her head away, biting down on her coat collar and stifling a moan. The dragonling, squealing, beat its wings beside her.
"Yen, make it!" she bellowed.
Her bonds gave way in an instant, as the disgusting, nauseating odour of charred skin became unbearable. Dorigere uttered a strange noise and fainted, suspended by his fetters from the wagon wheel. The sorceress, wincing with the pain, straightened up, lifting her now free leg. She screamed in a furious voice, full of pain and rage. The medallion on Geralt's neck jerked as though it were alive. Yennefer straightened her thigh, waved her foot towards the charging wagons of the Bearfield Constabulary, and shouted out a spell. The air crackled and gave off the smell of ozone.
"Oh, ye gods!"
Dandelion wailed in admiration.
"What a ballad this will be, Yennefer!"
The spell, cast by her shapely little foot, was not totally effective. The first wagon, and everything on it, took on the yellow colour of a kingcup, which the Bearfield soldiers, in the frenzy of battle, did not even notice. It did better with the second wagon, whose entire crew were transformed into huge, rough-skinned frogs, which hopped around in all directions, croaking comically. The wagon, now bereft of a driver, tipped over and fell apart. The horses, neighing hysterically, flared into the distance, dragging the broken shaft behind them. Yennefer bit her lip and waved her leg in the air again. The kingcup yellow wagon suddenly dissolved into kingcup yellow smoke, to the sound of lively musical tones drifting down from above, and its entire crew flopped onto the grass, stupefied, forming a picturesque heap. The wheels of the third wagon went from round to square, and the result was instant. The horses reared up, the wagon crashed over, and the Bearfield Constabulary were tipped out and thrown onto the ground. Yennefer, now driven by pure vindictiveness, flourished a leg ferociously and yelled out a spell, transforming the Bearfielders randomly into turtles, geese, woodlice, flamingos, and stripy piglets. The Zerikanians, expertly and methodically, finished off the rest. The dragon, having finally torn the nets to shreds, leapt up, flapped its wings, roared and hurtled, as straight as a ramrod, after the unharmed and fleeing Sheepbagger. Sheepbagger was dashing like a stag, but the dragon was faster. Geralt, seeing the gaping jaws and razor-sharp flashing teeth, turned his head away. He heard a gruesome scream and a revolting crunching sound. Dandelion gave a stifled shout. Yennefer, her face as white as a sheet, bent over double, turned to one side and vomited under the wagon. A silence fell, interrupted only by the occasional gaggling, croaking and squealing of the remains of the Bearfield Constabulary. Vere, smiling and pleasantly, stood over Yennefer, legs wide apart. The Zeracanian raised her sabre. Yennefer, pale, raised a leg.
"No," said Borch, also known as Three Jackdaws, who was sitting on a stone. In his lap, he was holding the dragonling, peaceful and content. "We aren't going to kill Madame Yennefer," the dragon villain Tretenmirth repeated. "It is over. What is more, we are grateful to Madame Yennefer for her invaluable assistance. Release them, Vere."
"Do you understand, Geralt?" Dandelion whispered, chafing feeling back into his numb arms. "Do you understand? There's an ancient ballad about a golden dragon. A golden dragon can
assume any form it wishes," Geralt muttered. "Even that of a human. I've heard that too, but I didn't believe it."
"Yapin Zigrin, sir," Villain Tretenmirth called to the dwarf, who was hanging onto a vertical rock 20 ells above the ground.
"What are you looking for there? Marmots? Not your favorite dish, if memory serves me. Climb down and busy yourself with the reavers. They need help. There won't be any more killing. Of anybody."
Dandelion, casting anxious glances at the Zeracanians, who were vigilantly patrolling the battlefield, was still trying to revive the unconscious Dorigere. Geralt was dressing Yennefer's scorched ankles and rubbing ointment into them. The sorceress was hissing with pain and mumbling spells. Having completed his task, the Witcher stood up.
"Stay here," he said. "I have to talk to him."
Yennefer stood up, wincing.
"I'm going with you, Geralt," she said, linking her arm in his. "May I? Please, Geralt?"
"With me, Yen? I thought, don't think."
She pressed herself against his arm.
"Yen,
it's all right, Geralt."
He looked into her eyes, which were warm, as they used to be. He lowered his head and kissed her lips, hot, soft, and willing, as they used to be. They walked over. Yennefer, held up by Geralt, curtsied low as though before a king, holding her dress in her fingertips.
"Three Jack, Villain Tretenmirth," the Witcher said.
"My name, when freely translated into your language, means three black birds," the dragon said.
The dragonling, little claws digging into his forearm, arched its back to be stroked.
"Chaos and order."
Villain Tretenmirth smiled.
"Do you remember, Geralt? Chaos is aggression. Order its protection against it. It's worth rushing to the ends of the world to oppose aggression and evil, isn't it, Witcher? Particularly, as you said, when the pay is fair. And this time it was. It was the treasure hoard of the she-dragon Myrgtabraka, the one poisoned outside Bearfield. She summoned me to help her, to stop the evil threatening her. Myrgtabraka flew away soon after Ike Denesle was removed from the battlefield. She had sufficient time while you were talking and quarrelling. But she left me her treasure as my payment."
The dragonling squealed and flapped its little wings.
"So you..."
"That is right," the dragon interrupted. "Well, it's the times we live in. For some time, creatures, which you usually call monsters, have been feeling more and more under threat from people. They can no longer cope by themselves. They need a defender. Some kind of witcher."
"And the destination? The goal at the end of the road?"
"This is it."
Villain Tretenmirth lifted his forearm. The dragonling squealed in alarm.
"I've just attained it. Owing to him, I shall survive, Geralt of Rivia. I shall prove there are no limits of possibility. One day, you will also find such a purpose, Witcher. Even those who are different can survive. Farewell, Geralt. Farewell, Yennefer.
The sorceress, grasping the witch's arm more firmly, curtsied again. Vilentre Tenmyth stood up and looked at her, and his expression was very serious.
Forgive me my frankness and forthrightness, Yennefer. It is written all over your faces. I don't even have to try to read your thoughts. You were made for each other, you and the Witcher. But nothing will come of it. Nothing. I'm sorry.
I know. Yennefer blanched slightly. I know, Vilentre Tenmyth. But I would also like to believe there are no limits of possibility. Or at least, I would like to believe that they are still very far away.
Via walked over, touched Geralt's shoulder, and quickly uttered a few words.
The dragon laughed.
Geralt, Via says she will long remember the tub at the Pensive Dragon. She hopes we'll meet again some day.
What?
Yennefer answered, narrowing her eyes.
Nothing,
the witcher said quickly.
Vilentre Tenmyth.
Yes, Geralt of Rivia.
You can assume any form, any that you wish.
Indeed.
Why then a man? Why Borch, with three black birds on his coat of arms?
The dragon smiled cheerfully.
I don't know, Geralt, in what circumstances the distant ancestors of our races encountered one another for the first time. But the fact is that for dragons, there is nothing more repugnant than man. Man arouses instinctive, irrational disgust in a dragon. With me, it's different. To me, you're likable.
Farewell. It was not a gradual, blurred transformation, or a hazy, pulsating trembling as with an illusion. It was as sudden as the blink of an eye. Where a second before had stood a curly-haired knight in a tunic decorated with three black birds, now sat a golden dragon, gracefully extending its long, slender neck. Inclining its head, the dragon spread its wings, dazzlingly gold in the sunshine. Yennefer sighed loudly. Via, already mounted beside Tyr, waved.
Via, the witcher said. You were right.
Hmm?
He is the most beautiful.
A Shard of Ice. Chapter 1. The dead sheep, swollen and bloated, its stiff legs pointing towards the sky, moved. Geralt, crouching by the wall, slowly drew his sword, careful not to let the blade grate against the scabbard. 10 paces from him, a pile of refuse suddenly arched up and heaved. The witcher straightened and jumped before the wave of stench emanating from the disturbed midden reached him. A tentacle, ending in a rounded, tapering protuberance, bristling with spikes, suddenly shot out from under the rubbish, hurtling out towards him at incredible speed. The witcher landed surely on the remains of a broken piece of furniture, tottering on a pile of rotten vegetables, swayed, regained his balance, and slashed the tentacle with a short blow of his sword, cutting off the tentacular club. He sprang back at once, but this time slipped from the boards and sank up to his thighs in the boggy midden. The rubbish heap erupted, throwing up viscous, foul-smelling slime, fragments of pots, rotten rags, and pale threads of sauerkraut, and from beneath it all burst an enormous, bulbous body, as deformed as a grotesque potato, lashing the air with three tentacles and the stump of a fourth. Geralt, trapped and immobilized, struck with a broad twist of his hips, smoothly hacking off another tentacle. The remaining two, as thick as tree boughs, fell on him with force, plunging him more deeply into the waist. The body glided towards him, ploughing into the midden like a barrel being dragged along. He saw the hideous bulbous shape snap open, gaping with a wide maw full of large, lumpish teeth. He let the tentacles encircle his waist, pull him with a squelch from the stinking slime, and drag him towards the body, now boring into the refuse heap with circular movements. The toothed maw snapped savagely and ferociously. Having been dragged close to the dreadful jaws, the witcher struck with his sword, two-handed, the blade biting smoothly and easily. The obnoxious, sweetish odour took his breath away, The monster hissed and shuddered, and the tentacles released their grip, flapping convulsively in the air. Geralt bogged down in the refuse, slashed again backhanded, the blade repulsively crunching and grating on the bared teeth. The creature gurgled and drooped, but immediately swelled, hissing, vomiting putrid slime over the Witcher. Keeping his balance with strenuous movements of his legs, still stuck in the muck, Geralt broke free and lunged forward, cleaving the refuse with his chest like a swimmer moving through water, and struck with all his strength from above, powerfully bearing down on the blade as it cut into the body between the weakly glowing eyes. The monster groaned, flapped around, unfolding onto the pile of muck like a punctured bladder, emitting palpable warm gusts of stench. The tentacles twitched and writhed among the rubbish. The Witcher clambered out of the treacly slime and stood on slippery but hard ground. He felt something sticky and revolting which had got into his boot, crawling over his calf. To the well, he thought. Wash it off. Wash off all the repulsiveness as soon as possible. Wash myself. The creature's tentacles flapped on the refuse one last time, sloppy and wet, and then stopped moving. A star fell. A brief flash of lightning illuminating the black firmament, flecked with unmoving dots of light. The Witcher made no wish. He was breathing heavily, wheezing, and feeling the effects of the elixirs he'd drunk before the fight wearing off. The gigantic heap of rubbish and waste piled up against the town walls, descending steeply towards the glistening ribbon of the river, looked pretty and alluring in the starlight. The Witcher spat. The monster was dead. Now part of the midden, where it had dwelled. Another star fell.
A garbage heap, the Witcher said with effort. Muck, filth and shit.
Chapter 2
You reek, Geralt.
Yennefer grimaced, not turning from the mirror, where she was cleaning off the colouring from her eyelids and eyelashes.
Take a bath.
There's no water, he said, looking into the tub.
We shall remedy that.
The sorceress stood up and threw the window open. Do you prefer seawater or fresh water?
Seawater for a change.
Yennefer spread her arms vigorously and shouted a spell, making a brief, intricate movement with her hands. Suddenly, a sharp, wet coldness blew in through the open window. The shutters juddered, and a green cloud gushed into the room with a hiss, billowing in an irregular sphere. The tub foamed with water, rippling turbulently, banging against the edges and splashing onto the floor. The sorceress sat down and resumed her previously interrupted activity.
How did it go? She asked. What was it on the midden?
A zoigle, as I suspected, Geralt said, pulling off his boots, discarding his clothes, and lowering a foot into the tub. Bloody hell, Yen, that's cold. Can't you heat the water?
No.
The sorceress, moving her face towards the looking glass and instilling something into her eye, using a thin glass rod.
That spell is bloody wearying and makes me feel sick, and the cold will do you good after the elixirs.
Geralt did not argue. There was absolutely no point arguing with Yennefer.
Did the cycle cause you any problems?
The sorceress dipped the rod into a vial and dropped something into her other eye, twisting her lips comically.
Not particularly.
From outside the open window, there was a thud, the sharp crack of wood breaking, and an inarticulate voice, tunelessly and incoherently repeating the chorus of a popular, obscene song.
A zoigle,
said the sorceress, as she reached for another vial from the impressive collection on the table and removed the cork from it. The fragrance of lilac and gooseberries filled the room.
Well, well. Even in a town, it's easy for a witcher to find work. You don't have to roam through the wilds at all. You know, Istreth maintains it's becoming a general rule. The place of every creature from the forests and swamps that becomes extinct is occupied by something else, some new mutation, adapted to the artificial environment created by people.
As usual, Geralt winced at the mention of Istreth. He was beginning to be sick of Yennefer's admiration for Istreth's brilliance, even if Istreth was right.
Istreth is right, Yennefer continued,
applying the lilac and gooseberry-perfumed something to her cheeks and eyelids.
Look for yourself. Pseudo-rats in sewers and cellars, zoigles in rubbish dumps, neocoruses in polluted moats and sewers, tagiers in mill ponds,
It's virtually symbiosis, don't you think?
And ghouls in cemeteries devouring corpses the day after the funeral, he thought, rinsing off the soap. Total symbiosis.
Yes.
The sorceress put aside the vials and jars. Witches can be kept busy in towns, too.
I think one day you'll settle in a city for good, Geralt.
I'd rather drop dead, he thought, but he did not say it aloud. Contradicting Yennefer, as he knew, inevitably led to a fight, and a fight with Yennefer was not the safest thing.
Have you finished, Geralt?
Yes.
Get out of the tub.
Without getting up, Yennefer carelessly waved a hand and uttered a spell. The water from the tub, including everything which had spilled onto the floor or was dripping from Geralt, gathered itself with a swoosh into a translucent sphere and whistled through the window. He heard a loud splash.
A pox on you, whoreskins!
An infuriated yell rang out from below.
Have you nowhere to pour away your piss? I bloody hope you're eaten alive by lice. Catch the ray pox and croak.
The sorceress closed the window.
Damn it, Yen, the witcher chuckled. You could have chucked the water somewhere else.
I could have, she purred, but I didn't feel like it.
She took the oil lamp from the table and walked over to him. The white nightdress, clinging to her body as she moved, made her tremendously appealing. More so than if she were naked, he thought.
I want to look you over, she said. The Zoigle might have injured you.
It didn't. I would have felt it.
After the elixirs? Don't be ridiculous. After the elixirs, you wouldn't even have felt an open fracture until the protruding bones started snagging on hedges. And there might have been anything on the Zoigle, including tetanus and cadaveric poison. If anything happens, there's still time for countermeasures. Turn around.
He felt the soft warmth of the lamp's flame on his body and the occasional brushing of her hair.
Everything seems to be in order, she said. Lie down before the elixirs knock you off your feet. Those mixtures are devilishly dangerous. They'll destroy you in the end.
I have to take them before I fight.
Yennefer did not answer. She sat down at the looking-glass once more and slowly combed her black, curly, shimmering locks. She always combed her hair before going to bed. Geralt found it peculiar, but he adored watching her doing it. He suspected Yennefer was aware of it. He suddenly felt very cold, and the elixirs indeed jolted him, numbed the nape of his neck, and swirled around the bottom of his stomach in vortices of nausea. He cursed under his breath and fell heavily onto the bed, without taking his eyes off Yennefer. A movement in the corner of the chamber caught his attention. A smallish, pitch-black bird sat on a set of antlers nailed crookedly to the wall and festooned in cobwebs. Glancing sideways, it looked at the witcher with a yellow, fixed eye.
What's that, Yen? How did it get here?
What?
Yennefer turned her head.
Oh, that? It's a kestrel.
A kestrel?
Kestrels are rufous and speckled, and that one's black.
It's an enchanted kestrel. I made it.
What for?
I need it.
She cut him off. Geralt did not ask any more questions, knowing that Yennefer would not answer.
Are you seeing Istreth tomorrow?
The sorceress moved the vials to the edge of the table, put her comb into a small box, and closed the side panels of the looking glass.
Yes. First thing. Why?
Nothing.
She lay down beside him without snuffing out the lamp. She never doused lights. She could not bear to fall asleep in the dark. Whether an oil lamp, a lantern, or a candle, it had to burn right down. Always. One more foible. Yennefer had a remarkable number of foibles.
Yen?
Uh-huh.
When are we leaving?
Don't be tedious.
She tugged the eiderdown sharply.
We've only been here 3 days, and you've asked that question at least 30 times. I've told you. I have things to deal with.
With Istreth?
Yes.
He sighed and embraced her, not concealing his intentions.
Hey, she whispered. You've taken elixirs.
What of it?
Nothing.
She giggled like a schoolgirl, cuddling up to him, arching her body and lifting herself to allow her nightdress to slip off. As usual, the delight in her nakedness coursed in a shudder down his back and tingled in his fingers as they touched her skin. His lips touched her breasts, rounded and delicate,
with nipples so pale they were visible only by their contours. He entwined his fingers in her hair, her lilac and gooseberry perfumed hair. She succumbed to his caresses, purring like a cat.